Welcome, 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 Flight Suit Friday listeners. Hope y'all are doing well out there. We got a special episode today, straight from...
Yo, Flight Suit Friday, what is up? You're not co-host anymore, but...
Yeah, dude.
I step in when, you know, there's good deals to be had, and we're at the Heli Expo here in Anaheim, California, and look who the cat dragged out, you know?
So. I know. It's kind of weird, dude. It seems like when all the good deal podcasts come up,
hey,
Kenny shows up.
Hey, someone's got to do it.
And it's
not for
the
faint of heart, man.
So great to see you, man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
So great.
You need a beer over there?
Yeah, please. What
dude,
you got?
So we just went on a adventure to look for some beers, and I was looking for something local for you. Couldn't quite find that, but I found this one, and I love the name of it. It's the Hazy Beer Hug. You look like you need a you need a hug. There you go, dude. And I think it's Kenny approved. I know you guys always give me a shout out.
All right, let me read this bad boy real quick. So this is a Goose Island Beer Company, 6.8%. So it's definitely Kenny approved.
Nice. Yeah.
And bright sunshiny haze, dude. I love it. From Goose Island.
Yeah.
That's
I'm going
up
with Golden Road Brewing, which is right here in LA. It's the Big Hazy Wolf at 9%. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Let's get the party started.
All right. Let's do it. And we got Ryan Vandehei on the phone too.
Yeah.
Ryan, what's up, dude?
I actually forgot Ryan was there. Glad you said something.
Oh, thanks, Kenny.
Sorry, Ryan.
It's pretty rare
How's
moment,
going,
dude.
Everybody?
I can't when's the last time you used the mic from home?
Oh man, it's been a while. Been too busy lately.
You're like basically ops of Houston right now, is that? Or did I make that up?
Yeah, James Conner retired on Friday.
All right.
So
congrats to James Conner.
Yeah.
What a great dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was my roommate in flight school. One of the most disciplined individuals when it came to like studying. I was not that person.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Those are good buds to have, though. Our roommates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great pilot. Phenomenal guy. Going to be missed big time. So. I get to just be pretend ops for a few months until we get somebody new.
Okay.
It's awesome, man. Good luck with that. How many phone calls are you answering per night?
Oh, it's actually not been too bad. It's pretty quiet. These days, it's mostly dry suit waivers, so that's good.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Had a couple good cases lately, so.
Okay.
Things are starting to heat up a little bit, but it's been pretty slow.
Cool, man. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. I think we're just going to jump straight into it. We've got Captain Pat Dill with us this evening to talk about your storied career, and then we'll get into a couple other topics, like I'm sure some SAR stories and some PTSD stuff, which you've been kind of taking on. But without further ado.
Yeah, thanks for having
Captain.
Me.
Thanks.
I appreciate it. It's good to meet you, everybody, virtually or here in person. So great venue. And this is good. I've been listening to the podcast for a little bit, and I go back before this. I was going back and listening to him, and see who was on there, and a lot of great names, a lot of good folks. So you guys certainly pull in a crowd, and I guess I'm lucky to be here.
We're just happy to have you.
This is great.
I mean, sometimes it's like pulling hair trying to get folks on the podcast, you know. But
really,
sometimes you know,
that's true.
People
pilots,
are busy though.
Pilots are humble. That's true.
Indeed.
No egos at all. I could see that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So why don't you give us just a quick, you know, introduction. Oh, actually, what are you drinking over there? We forgot about that.
Yeah. So it's a made in San Diego, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
A peanut butter milk stout.
Ooh.
It's a belching beaver.
So did you guys buy a couple different cases of beer, or is it a variety pack?
We got a couple different things.
And that's what's up.
And a good stout for me is always accompanied with some bourbon. So we got
I just saw how much barrel, of that you poured for a couple people, but okay.
Well, here we go.
Yeah. Awesome.
Should be a good time.
Yeah.
But thank you for having me. And this is, I've been looking forward to a Guinness or a stout and some bourbon with you guys and tell some stories and then highlight some things that I think could be, that we have some work we could do in the Coast Guard and making some improvements for folks.
Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, just tell folks a little bit those of you that don't know you, I know you're, well-known name in the 65 world, but.
Yep. Joined in 95, which it's funny because a lot of kids on the hangar deck now weren't born then.
That's absolutely true.
Which is always a reminder. I'm getting a little old, a little long in the tooth.
Early 2000 babies now.
That's right. Yeah. Crazy. It's awesome. enlisted did 5 years enlisted, and then eventually got picked up for flight school. Did New Orleans during the Katrina Rita years. Good times. And then went to Air Station Los Angeles and did a couple of years there as the FSO. Picked up for a fun tour in D.C., did 2 years there, or three, and then down to be AOPS, and then fleeted up to OPS in Barrancas.
Oh, awesome.
In Puerto Rico, yeah. I'm the king of fleet ups, if you didn't know that.
I did not.
No, it's if there is a path, I've made it. It's well-worn. So, yeah, AOPS, OPS, back to D.C. I did some budget stuff for aviation, worked with 7-Eleven quite a bit. At DCO, which the office is no longer around, and then over to back to New Orleans as the XO.
Okay,
a couple of years as XO, and then a fleet up to CO, which was really one of my favorite times. So
that doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't.
So I
got pretty lucky.
Yeah, I think we met in Barrancas. I think we overlapped a little bit. 2012 is when you got there.
I just came in.
That's what you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. I also did some research. Do you hold the record for like most over torques in the 65 in like a short amount of time? Is that true?
Probably so, yes.
Okay.
I think there's an Elvis Award somewhere hanging around.
Okay.
For quite a few. And it's honest, this is scientific. I've proven this. I went from New Orleans, where the air is very humid and thick and dense, to Los Angeles. Okay. And instantly, it was like four over torques. I forget how many. Very short period of time. I
forgot how to fly the 65.
I don't know. It was very touchy.
Yeah.
The blades spin faster, I guess, in the cool LA air.
Yeah.
But it was not all my fault. Well, I signed for the plane on all of them.
Well, so like any good PIC, you always blame the co-pilot.
Correct.
Yeah.
But yet, I get the Elvis Award.
Of course.
So,
have you always had the Elvis Award in your award rooms that you've been at?
Always. Okay. Should be. Absolutely. Man. And there should be a velvet painting from, if you can get one from Tijuana, those are the quintessential.
I think we could probably drive down there right now and get one of those. Yeah. We're not 20 too far.
Bucks. We could probably, Max could be back before midnight.
there overnight.
Yeah, I hope people are still doing the Elvis Awards and not, you know, if you make them thoughtful and funny, it should be fun.
Yeah.
Some people do get a little upset over it.
Yeah. And I've seen a few wardrooms that are like that, and it always saddens my heart because I think it's one of those things. I'm always beating the drum of like aviation culture, and that to me is one of them. Like, man, if you can't laugh at yourself when you make a mistake and you can't be humble, man, you're in the wrong business.
Absolutely.
You know? And you're right. It does take some people to actually like put some effort into like a good call sign and like a good story, which like even if 90% of it's not true, like
always embellish.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's good.
I was Gorilla Grip Dill with the over torqued. I mean, and I've ridden my fair share. I love riding them for folks, but you have to have that right environment.
Yeah.
Where people feel comfortable to come back. And I think the 65 community does it the best.
Yeah.
This here is kind of proof of that.
Yeah.
Sort of that mess up, fess up.
I feel like folks have pretty thick skin in the community.
Yeah.
You know, at least laugh
I've
about.
I've had the Elvis 3 times since I've been to Houston.
Oh, boy. How many times?
what's the best one? What's your best story, Velvet Elvis?
Yeah.
Oh, for me? Well, thankfully, I wasn't the guy that maybe hit a bird on a ground run, but at least there's evidence after the ground run. That wasn't me, thankfully. I think my best one was I was trying to do the rotor brake start RBK off test, where you just turn it on using the start RBK, and the blue book changed a little bit, and I didn't turn the page properly, and I was like, well, not working, but you actually have to turn the RBK off in order for it to work. So I failed the ground check. Thankfully, it wasn't working.
Nice.
You didn't break anything,
the
though.
The was like, so. Sure you don't want to try that again, man?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah, sir. Once again, yeah, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. I also heard that you were one of the few people that's actually like, shot a catch and were happy with it. And, were able to affect a rescue based off of it. Is that true?
It is true.
Okay.
And it's funny because when I would teach it to people, I'm like, you might actually use this. I would never do a match for real.
Oh, no.
That's an emergency
procedure.
That's
why we got rid of it.
But but yeah, we picked up a guy in New Orleans. So going back to New Orleans, the Ricks used to call us directly in the operations center. We would sit there on the desk, you know, standing your duty, and you were the duty crew. And for a bit, and you'd do shifts. And so one of the rigs called and they said, hey, you got to come get our buddy fell from the rig. He fell 75 feet down, hit his head on the way down on something metal.
Good Lord.
Yeah. They recovered him. Amazingly, they had a doctor on board who did CPR and got him breathing again. And so he had a huge, huge gouge at the side of his head, in and out of consciousness and aggressive, like kind of combative.
Mm-hmm.
And so they called us, say, hey, you got to come get him. Of course, you ask, where are you? You know, have you landed? Is there a pad there? And answering the normal questions, what's the weather like? Weather's great.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Come get our buddy.
Yeah.
And I was kind of a new AC with flying with Mark Upson, who was a prior 58 Kiowa Army guy that came in, a real good pilot. He was a new co-pilot. And I can remember John Rice, and I don't remember the flight mechanic, unfortunately, and I'll think of it later. But we get within, I don't know, 10 miles of this rig and weather system of fog, moving fog. And so we're at 500 feet, and we start coming down. It's pushing us down. We get to 200.
Yep.
And I said, this isn't going to work.
Uh-huh.
Well, we can't drive in through this crap. We still had 8 miles to go or so. So we pop up to about 1,500 feet. We broke out of it. Went right over the top of the GPS position, and there were actually three rigs in a sort of a triangle formation near each other.
Uh-huh.
We had them do a log count over the radio and watch the needle swing to make sure we had the right rig, and then did the catch. And afterwards, I got asked a lot of questions like, did you adjust the catch? You know, did you program or change anything on it? Where was the land? Did you know where the landing pad, like what direction? And were the, you know, we're just kids. I said, no, we just programmed in.
Yeah.
Let George do everything and didn't mess with it.
Just sent it.
Let's see. And the agreement was, hey, we'll try this once
uh-huh.
To get down there. And if we can't, if nobody feels comfortable, you call it. That's it. We'll go back home.
Yeah.
Give it a one college try. So, and we have it all on video, which is actually pretty cool if you ever want to see it.
Oh, nice.
It's good.
Yeah, he sent it to me, and you know how sometimes you see pictures of like, oh, the weather was dog doing. You see the picture, and you're like, man, it's not that bad.
Yeah,
it looks
I could
like a mile and a half. You know,
that was 0-0.
I looked at it, and I was like, I don't even want to watch you land. So I'll send it to you guys. Yeah,
it's pretty cool because so George is flying us in into the wind at the rig, and we're painting a good picture on the radar. And you know how slow will the 65 go when it's all coupled up?
A minimum of 40 knots?
40 knots.
Yep.
And that felt like we were moving so fast.
Oh, I bet.
Like, I just want this thing to go slower.
Yeah.
And we could see down. We're at 50 feet, you know, we can see down to the water, but up ahead is just white all around us. And so we're creeping up, and Mark is in the right seat, and I'm in the left, and I'm you know, safety pilot, and I'm looking at the radar picture, and I can see the rig with the mark on it.
Can I interject real quick? At this point, are you feeling pretty comfortable? Is this something you guys did quite a bit, or were you sucking some seat?
No. I think everything was good. Everything was normal. The conditions of the, and this is in a Bravo model too, with the chicklets, you know, the old LTS 101 engines.
I've never seen that
one. Max.
So it was the old, not as much power.
Did
for
you
sure.
have a weather radar on that or no?
Same one you have today.
Okay.
Yeah. It hasn't really changed.
Okay.
And no, everybody's good.
Yeah,
everybody,
okay.
And we're making call-outs. There's a steady that flow when you're in a rhythm, and it feels normal. And I watched as the rig gets into that noise band on the radar where there's no more target.
Right.
And I said, okay, guys, it's in front of us somewhere.
Oh, boy.
And we all kind of look up. There's eyeballs, like, everywhere forward.
That's crazy.
And all of a sudden, it materializes, and you can see it in the video through the windscreen in the front because a mechanic was holding this 8-millimeter recorder.
Yeah.
They don't do that.
A what?
They don't do that anymore. Yeah.
What? An 8-millimeter camera?
Camera, yeah. Camcorder.
Is that like the one you put over your shoulder for like Christmas morning?
Has a satellite uplink to it?
Yeah. Petty Officer Smith took his dad's video recorder for the SAR case.
Yeah. Somewhere. So we're all looking at it, and finally the flight mechanic, and you hear it on the ICS. He said, I got it. Well, the pad was... And it was like 85 feet, and we're at 50. So Mark said, hey, decouple me. and he kind of climbs up. Thank God it was in front of us.
Good
so
Lord.
It's a jack-up rig with three pilings on it.
Okay.
And so you can only really come in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 180, you can cut it. So we get it up there, and he gently puts it down on the pad. You'll hear him. He says, well, that was fun. And so the fly mechanic and the swimmer, they jump out to go get this guy in the litter and get him put in there. We're taking the dock with us. The funny part is we're in dry suits. I think this is in January of, 2006.
Okay.
Yeah. And Mark says, Mark was notorious for having a small bladder.
Huh.
Yeah, you can cut that out if you want. Mark's like, I got to go to the bathroom. So yeah, I'm like, that's fine, dude, hurry up. He runs off. We finally get the patient loaded up. And of course, the doctor is like easily 250.
Of course.
Yeah, small, but petite. And he jumps right in the fly mech seat. He's like, oh, this is my seat. And now we're waiting. Where the hell is Mark? Mark took a while.
Still trying to go pee.
Yeah, yeah.
He was probably changing his underwear is where he was.
That's what he joked. What were you doing down there? Eating lunch or breakfast?
grabbing a bowl of gumbo from the galley on board.
But so we get in. We finally get strapped in, and Mark climbs up just a little bit, pedal turn to get away so we're pointing the right direction, and does an actual like ITO manually right into the fog.
Back up into it.
And then we motored up, get the door shut, head to Gulfport Regional.
I love that. I've only heard of two operational catches or approaches to the water, and both of them have been in New Orleans, surprisingly.
Yep.
But, I think there's a bit of a microclimate down there. And
the spring
it just
fog
gets,
there is real.
Yeah, I remember that. The other one was Mike Vickers, where they flew on the, what was it before the T6? Sorry, the T28.
T-34.
Jeez, thank you.
Louise.
See?
It wasn't that long ago.
Wow, even I flew that.
Well, these things don't go in sequential numbers, so I'm sure 28's not too far from 34. Anyway, sorry about that. So you guys climbed back up to 1,500 feet and then shot your catch. And I'll explain that to some of our students sometimes. I'm like, hey, dudes, just so you know, when we do these catches at 300 feet or 500 feet, it's probably not realistic.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be at a higher altitude cruising out and shooting your catch from a higher altitude, so... Anyways, something to keep in mind.
Yeah. It all worked. Yeah. It all worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did get asked later on, did you put a lot of thought into the... I'm like, no, we just...
just
coupled
did
it up and then, give this a shot. Yeah, had we got there at the bottom and the pad was on the other side, I think we would have had to just ITO out of it.
Yeah, I started watching that and I was like, I can't even finish watching it. I'm assuming you could see the edge of the pad, so you knew you weren't going to climb
into it,
right?
Okay. You can see the whole rig, and you'll see it in the video when you...
So has this ancient video from 2006 been digitized and colorized for our viewing pleasure?
We got jokes.
I only ask because Miranda's going to want to see it for the Instagram post.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's even on YouTube.
Oh, perfect.
Nice. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I want to get into a little bit of what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, sure.
And I know, maybe 2 months ago, you kind of approached me and said, hey, love the podcast, love what you guys are doing. I'd love to talk about, PTSD and how it affects our coasties every day. And what kind of led you to that? I even heard you wrote a white paper against...
We did.
Yeah.
So, the white paper was kind of a collaboration with Travis MG, one of the attorneys at... fantastic author and writer at D11, the judge advocate. But what started was, since I'm the D11 DRM, Chief of Incident Management, I kind of own all of the boat stations. And so I went to tour, try to hit as many of them as I can. And then we went to Golden Gate. And Golden Gate's famous for,
Of course, bridge jumpers, yeah.
Right. And so I was talking with their warrant, Boston Armstrong, who's just a phenomenally good person. And I wish he was here. I cannot do the work that, even say the stories that he says to do justice. But he's very gifted at speaking about kind of the things that they go through at the boat station. And so he'll talk about the 40 people that they work there. On average, they get 40 to 60 bridge jumpers a year. And which is crazy.
That's huge. That's way more than I expected.
Yeah.
If you think about it too, when I asked him, I said, okay, well, how old is the demographic typically for these folks jumping? And he says 18 to 25.
Oof.
Yeah, young. Yeah. And, very young. You know, the bridge is 245 feet high. It's iconic. When people fall from that distance, they're hitting 80 miles an hour, something like that. So it does some damage.
Absolutely.
And the kids that that work at the boat station, what do you think their ages are?
18, 25.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So they're picking them up. And they learned over time, because they were finding that a lot of instances of like alcohol abuse, suicidal ideations, just some mental health issues. And somebody got smart and said, hey, you know, the DOD and the Navy have behavioral health technicians, BHTs, and they have a program that we can send our corpsmen to. So they screened a few, set up a program, and the idea was to kind of blow it up and have 13 dedicated billets all throughout the Coast Guard for these behavioral health technician folks. And unfortunately, like most things in the Coast Guard, constrained by budget.
Yeah.
The dream was there, and things have been written well to kind of to lay the foundation, but we have one billet. Is there. And so they're there. You think about what we live with every day with flight surgeons. Like, you got a problem, you just walk down the hall, there's a flight surgeon to talk to or get your, and so now that I'm not in that, I'm at the district, I'm just another, you know, I'm looking around, where's my flight surgeon?
Yeah.
It's a different world.
Even right now, that's not a guarantee that an air station has flight surgeon.
They have APAs.
And that's wild, yeah.
Their APAs have been fantastic. The ones I've worked with are just as good, I think.
Yeah.
And that was a big push. I know that, there was a lot of organ rejection and bringing APAs in. But so they have this behavioral health technician that's there, and they work and see with them every day. They do briefs with them constantly and to get to know them. Yep. So they know if something's wrong. And after every time they do a body recovery, they meet with them, and they're setting up specific, like they'll put things in the record. This happened on this date and time. So it's being recorded and tracked.
That's smart.
It's something that, honestly, a lot of us have done things in the Coast Guard, have picked up bodies in various ways or missions that we do. Like, if you think about Cuttermen doing migrant operations, or the folks that went down to the southwest border doing operations down there.
Mm-hmm.
Body recoveries off of boat stations, helicopters.
Yeah. I mean, here's a pretty small sample, but like, of this group, how many of you have done body recovery or have seen some, you know, images that you'd rather not see, you know?
Yeah.
All of us are shaking our heads, right? And Ryan's given a verbal there. So,
yeah.
You know, we've all done that, and we're expected to do that on a somewhat regular basis, you know? So I guess to kick it off, like, do you think the Coast Guard is doing a good job? Or are we moving in the right direction? What do we need to do to get better as an organization, and then like all the way down to like the individual level?
So what can we do? Tons of improvement can be made. I think that we've been discussing it. D11 has been pushing the white paper, and we've tried to talk to different folks in the medical community within the Coast Guard to see, hey, what are the options? And we've gone round and round. So, hey, can we put something in Almas that tracks it? That was a thought. How about using the OMSET program? Right?
Okay.
Like we do a hearing.
Yeah.
If your hearing degrades, you're checked every year, but that doesn't really fit, meet the mail, because it doesn't connect up with the VA.
Okay.
So this is another issue. The warrant that works at Golden Gates routinely gets phone calls from Coasties that were stationed there years ago. And, hey, you know, I'm having some problems. I go to the VA to get some services, some help. And because nothing was ever entered in a record or in the medical system, I have no proof. So he writes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a whole other job in itself.
And we've gone through that. He and I met with the folks at Personnel Service Center and said, hey, give us a spreadsheet of everybody who's ever been stationed at Golden Gate, just their names. And so we've gone through and we've found members currently still in the Coast Guard that were there before they had the behavioral health technicians.
Okay.
And we've been sending them letters and emails saying, it's like a buddy letter you draft up. It says, hey, I served here from this year to this year. On average, we see this many bridge jumpers or this. A member would be expected to have served on this many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it serves, kind of meets the mail for the VA. And so it's a very small population of folks. But think about where all the big bridges are and the cases like that. So we have Niagara Falls.
Oh, yeah.
San Diego, the Coronado Bridge is just as high.
Yep.
And they get jumpers. And our folks, I can tell you, are picking people up quite a bit, even there. So what could we do better? I think it's still being worked out. We're trying to figure out, you know, does it go into MH Genesis? And the argument is that, nope, that's for treatment.
Yeah.
That's where you go to get treated. So what we need is some kind of a repository for traumatic incidents, some kind of a new database that's set up. Maybe it communicates with the VA. It definitely connects to Genesis. And so I tell folks now, I mean, I wish someone had said this to me earlier, but, you know, every time we go do our, depressing topic.
Huh? No.
Sorry.
No, but
it's important stuff to talk about, though.
Yeah. I think it's really important. And I think the timing of this could not be better because mental health is something that we're not good at talking about.
No.
It has this taboo that nobody wants to talk about it. And we all are kind of type A personalities and we've been trained to compartmentalize, right? And you have to. When you're in that moment, mm-hmm. If you don't compartmentalize, you're going to kill four more people, you know, at least in a 65 world. And so that happens, but we're also not good at decompartmentalizing. And that may happen 30 minutes after you land. It may happen
30 years.
Yeah. It may happen 5 days, yeah. 6 weeks. And so I think it's really important to talk about. And I think that's why I kind of asked that pointed question of, you know, you're kind of, we're doing like high wave top of like, man, what could the Coast Guard do? And that's going to take some time. And obviously it's not an easy thing to discuss or even solve. And it's not going to happen overnight. So like in the right. meantime, those crews that are going out tonight, mm-hmm. You know, how do we do a good job to make sure that, you know, I don't know, you know.
I say, and unfortunately, not every unit's an air station where you have a flight surgeon nearby.
Yeah.
And so the only time you really have to kind of put that in your record is during your PHA. And so when you're filling it out, and I never knew this, if you click, you know, are you sleeping well at night? If you click no, it opens up a whole nother, the PCL portion of it with the following. Yeah, I never knew that. Because we all sleep great. You're feeling great that day. You go to your medical appointment. Yeah, I ate enough vegetables and I had one beer this week.
Well, how often do we say, yes, everything's okay, just have a quick, clean correct. PHA as well?
Yeah, right. I want my upchit. I don't want to get back to flying. I don't need any problems.
Exactly.
Yeah. So then there's the other option, which I'll admit. I've done the counseling sessions through CG support for years, which are hit or miss, depending on, we move. So you might get established with somebody and they work out well, but you only get 12 sessions. You can get more after that. They can be marginal or good, depending on where you are and the quality of therapists. But that also doesn't go in your medical record.
Okay.
And I will say also, you have to use the password when you log into CG support, which is USCG, but they don't tell you that it's like password encrypted, but it is. So anybody trying to go onto that website, just type in USCG and it'll log in.
Excellent. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Yeah. Ryan, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, just real quick, I wanted to say that one of the, like, we already mentioned one of the great things that we can do is, I mean, that's a huge personal endeavor that you went on, sir, to reach out to TSC to get those letters going and to identify a need and be proactive and looking out for current and prior COSIs. So I think we have to pause and just say thank you for taking that initiative because those actions matter, especially from senior leaders in this organization, and we need to be mindful of that. And then to Kenny's point, something I thought about is talking to somebody about this the other day, the things that make us very good pilots and air crew, of that compartmentalization, being able to push that away and focus on the now and handle the problem, that kind of makes us not great in normal life, right? Because it's important to be able to emotionally connect with yourself, to tap into your emotions and have real conversations both with yourself and other people. But compartmentalization can get in the way of that. And so we can train ourselves into doing something that is harmful outside of the cockpit to us. And you almost have to train yourself differently at home than you would mm-hmm. in the aircraft.
Well said.
Yeah. I know Ryan and I were talking earlier of just, you know, like, you know, What does PTSD look like? You know, we talk about like, oh, you know, it can happen, you know, 2 days later. And we were just kind of talking about some personal examples. So if you guys have one, maybe start thinking about it, because I think it's important to just talk about. But one of the we talked about like a spectrum that there can be, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you think of like VA, and we immediately think combat veterans who were in Afghanistan, that, you know, a loud noise goes off and, you know, they crouch behind a table. And yeah, that is the far, you know, extreme on one side. And then there's other extremes. And I didn't even realize that. I think I had like built in some things into my personal life, which is, you know, having seen so many scuba divers lost and dead and all these things, like, it just made me think of, I am very risk adverse when it comes to like the ocean. And I remember growing up in Santa Cruz where the water's 52 degrees. Dude, we used to go out there in this little tiny boat, you know, 8 to 10 foot seas, small craft warning. And, like, man, if one of us fell over, the likelihood of someone getting there to save you is very low without sort of, you know, rescue equipment.
You weren't thinking about that at the time, though.
No, because you're, yeah, you know, you're I was 22. I'm like, eh, whatever, you know. right. You don't think about that. And you're like, oh, and nor are you exposed to it. So that's why you don't even think about it, right?
That's a good point.
But when you're constantly exposed and you see tragedy, then it really makes you think about it. Oh, so. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. I think I can relate to that, because there's two things that scare me with my daughter now that I am a, you know, a father, have a kid. It's
Which
like
totally
one,
changes things.
It totally does. But, you know, I don't like her being near busy roads. That's probably like a given for any parent.
Yeah.
But dude, her being around water, and she's very water confident, and I made sure she was. I beat her up in the water.
Oh yeah.
But dude, her around the water scares me.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I'm like, I can't keep my eyes off her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because, probably from what I've seen.
Yeah. So. Now you are a prior swimmer. I'm assuming that you had some cases that were pretty gnarly.
Yeah. Yeah. There was definitely some cases. To the PTSD point, or SISM type stuff. So remember we had a string of mishaps back in starting in probably 2008. Was it?
That's when it sort of started.
2008 until, 2012, there was a big string. Mm-hmm. Man, I was a, third-class swimmer, and I remember instances where leadership would come into the shop and be like, hey, there's just been a plane crash. Everybody's going to have an all-hands in, 5 minutes, meet outside, and we're like no further information or anything like that. So, of course, you immediately think, oh, it's my guys. We have flights out, and, it's, of course, doesn't really matter whether it's, your unit's aircraft or different units' aircraft, but it does hit home a little bit more when it's your guys. So anyways, that stuff is always spooky, but I used to have reoccurring dreams of being in helicopter crashes.
Yeah.
That's weird. That was not really, that was not very favorable, as a new aviator in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
It went away, but I didn't seek help, right? It just kind of went away.
Yeah.
So that kind of probably leads to the whole stuffing things down or compartmentalizing things, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's funny. I noticed a marked change in the, I would say probably from 08 on, for the rescue swimmers and the flight mechs speaking up in the back about things going on in the front.
That's definitely a thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Which is a good thing.
I don't know if that was a taught skill or, it was more of an intuitive thing, but you guys know what we're talking about. Rescue swimmers or flight mechs being like, hey, you're off altitude.
Right.
Hey, you're off heading. You're like, yeah, dude, I know, I'm changing altitude.
Well, yeah.
And
there's sometimes you're like, yeah, I'm off by 6 feet. Yeah. Got it. Roger, check.
They're engaged, which is good.
Versus like, hey, even if you start a shallow descent at 100 feet per minute, because you want to go look at sea turtles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
But you don't say anything. Like, you're sitting in the back and you're like, all I know is that the water's getting closer. And that's where that those tenets of CRM come in. I'm like, hey, dude, sir, what altitude we coming to? Sick, rad. Yeah. Okay, but that is that first step of CRM to just be like, oh, we're coming to 125. I'm happy with that. You're happy with that. Awesome. Yeah. Good.
I think that was a good change to come out of those mishaps.
Absolutely.
It's just crew engagement. Like, hey, what are you doing? Because, you know, my life's on the line here mm-hmm. too. If you guys are doing something weird, or perhaps if you lost the bubble, you know, yep. I'm going to call you out. I think that's a great thing that we do in the Coast Guard now.
Yeah.
Oh, me and Happensteiner were flying, doing surf ops, and the swimmer in the water gave us the up command, and we just missed tagging the tail with a breaker that an A-frame that was coming up behind us that we had no idea. And that's CRM from the water, man. Like,
yeah,
we had no idea that was coming our way.
Yeah. Ryan, do you have any cases that kind of stand out or any personal stuff that you'd be willing to share?
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple, like, tough ones. One in Humboldt, I think I might have mentioned on the show before, like a six-year-old kid, the chest caved in, and I had to get out of the helo to carry the litter. But actually, like, some of the weird, like, just seeing people that are DOA, like, when you get there, and you just know you can't help them, but to just, like, see it, like, those images definitely have stuck with me. And the real one that kind of gets me is when I was, kind of when I first got here in Houston, I went on a case and we searched like all day. We relieved the overnight crew and we were looking for a dad who had gone in after his 2-year-old daughter, who had floated out on a raft, and, he got stuck by an undertow. And so we were just searching for him all day, and we knew where he like in the area, like, you kind of know that it's a lost cause, but you kind of force yourself to kind of keep going. You know, you got to keep the searches going and everything like that. But his family, the mom and the daughter, were standing on the beach, like watching us do the search pattern. And my wife was TDY at the time, so I was doing the solo dad thing with a 14-month-old at home. And, man, I got home and I was wrecked. I was like, it just really hit me hard. And, Nick, you talked kind of about the nightmare stuff. I've definitely had like bouts of nightmares kind of ebb and flow throughout my time and my career. Kind of you go through those periods where certain things, certain events, whether it's your flight or someone else's or something happens, and you kind of, I've definitely had ebbs and flows of nightmares, and it's just not fun because you always wake up kind of unrest for the next day, and it kind of lingers with you, that gross feeling throughout the day. And yeah, it's definitely a thing that's hit me throughout the career.
Ryan, I'm gonna kind of put you on the spot here, but having gone through that experience, do you feel like you got the support you needed? Did you voice up the way you thought you should have? And I'm assuming you were the PIC, if not a senior member in an aircraft. Do you feel like you asked good questions of your crew and or followed up with them? And if not, like, what would you have done differently? I know that was like 6 questions in one there.
No, I love it. Early in my career, I didn't check in with things. I kind of normalized, like, oh, we see crappy things sometimes. You kind of move on. That case that I mentioned, I followed up with my crew afterwards and just kind of checked in with them. And knowing kind of your crew's history, having a co-pilot that was in flight school around some of the times of the Class A's, and knowing your flight mix, like, where did this guy come from, or what their history is, I think helped me a little bit. I wish that I checked in better with the air crew. Sometimes it's tough, and it feels weird, and I struggled with, like, getting past that weirdness a little bit, because I see some of this FISM stuff and checking in with your crews a little bit like the safe talk. I think, Kenny, I gave you this analogy earlier of, like, during safe talk training, they teach you to like ask the pointed question, right? Is just come out and say, like, do you think, like, are you thinking about suicide or something like that? Because that pointed question is important. And the FISM stuff, it's not just like, hey, yeah, that was weird, man. You good? Like, asking the really pointed question is something that I wish I had done better then, and it's something I strive to continue to do better as I take more senior leadership roles, pulling people aside and being like, hey, this is it's okay to feel crappy. You know, PTSD isn't like you said, it doesn't have to be the full spectrum. And also providing that resource and checking in, not just that one time, but maybe a little bit later as well. And then to answer, I think one of the other questions you had is, I did not take care of myself properly when all of that happened. I didn't, like, it was kind of a nothing burger case, right? You go out and you don't find anything, so you kind of come home. And I didn't feel big enough for someone else to, like, feel required to check in with me. And I didn't feel big enough to me for me to want to check in with myself either. So it actually took, like, a couple months before I realized, like, how weird it had been for me. And it took me going on vacation to Connecticut, and I kind of had a mini, like, stress anxiety moment on my dad's boat, because I was like, we're on a river, and I was like, oh man, if my daughter goes in right now, like, if I'm going in after her. And then I just started reliving all that stuff all over again. And I didn't realize what it had done to me kind of chronically before I kind of peeled that back. And again, it wasn't major, it wasn't huge, and it was like on the sliding scale of it all, but you definitely have to check in with yourself and ask yourself those pointed questions too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, man, I really appreciate you sharing that. I know sometimes, like, especially there's going to be lots of people listening to that. So, yeah, thanks for sharing. And I don't know, Captain Doe, I feel like at least for you and me, like, we grew up in an era where, like, someone just felt obligated to throw out, like, a quick, like, oh, yeah, everyone's good, right, to stand the duty. Right. Okay, bye.
Right. How many times has the GAR switched?
Right.
What are we doing, you know, this week for? Point system or what? Yeah.
Yeah, versus, like, what Ryan's talking about is asking, like, a very pointed question of, yeah. And yeah, maybe you're, like, good to stand the duty, but maybe after that you're like, whew, man, I got home and I saw my family and it changed. Something changed in that. And maybe someone is just begging to be asked, like, yeah, how are you doing?
Right.
Like, no, give me some, like, and someone like, oh, I'm actually awful. Like, I'm so glad you said something, you know? And so I think that's something that I, could be a lot better at.
And it's knowing too, and I know we're constrained now with the shortage of people, but the SAR system isn't dependent on the one rescue swimmer to make sure that the duty crew is complete and so on and so on. Like, yeah, if you need a break, and I feel like folks are better at that today, especially the younger generation, they'll speak up and they, hey, I, you know, give me a mental health day. I need a break here,
yeah,
which is great. But no,
I don't think we're quite there yet. Though. Yeah. I still think there's that perceived pressure that if I say something, I'm screwing my buddies over.
Yeah, probably in a way.
Yeah.
And resource.
Now I'm not saying it's
duty.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's an actual, like, I'm sure.
No.
I'm sure if I'm like, hey, yeah, Nick, hey man, can you take a duty? And there's going to be some ribbing there of like, oh, what do you got? Like a little bloody nose. And you're like, yeah, hey, actually, man, I had a hard time getting out of bed this morning, or, I was in tears in the fetal position after I put my daughter to sleep because of the, and you're like, oh, got it, man. And we're going to, yeah, I'm going to follow up with that. And how are you doing, bud? You know,
it, yeah, might be dependent on the person too. Cause you might have folks who, are habitual, well, you know, I mean, back routers, yeah, of things.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, man, I would really hope someone doesn't play the, you know, I'm having a tough mental time, you, yeah, know, handling whatever I,
oh,
saw,
gosh, yeah,
you know? So,
well, that's the, yeah, thing. If it affects your work, then that's an issue.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You're not 100%.
And you should not be operating, no, an aircraft or standing duty or performing, yeah, the roles of your duty, whatever it is, you know, yeah, flight mech, rescue swimmer, pilot, whatever else.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen though too is we are so good and care so much about work that we do everything we can to be the best versions of ourselves at work. And so in talking to some people that have struggled with this and other mental health stuff, like, it's the home life that'll start to really degrade on them because they exert so much effort at work to be safe and to be present and to, they feel honor bound to do the job, that they can't be themselves at home. And so they start missing things at home. They start, you know, the their relationship starts to suffer, their parenthood starts to suffer. And those are the things that we don't always see in people, right? Like, I know Nick's a great dad. I've seen him interact with his kid and his family, but like, I don't see it every day. I don't see the like long-term effects of it or how he's doing. I just see him at work when he's in his element, you know? I think those are the things that we got to pay attention to and in ourselves as well as in other people when we can.
Oh, I am so guilty of that, to the point where, you know, not even necessarily PTSD, but like Alex saw me take a work phone call after hours and she's like, who is that? I was like, oh, that's someone from work. And she's like, why do you not talk to me like that? Like, you're so jovial and kind.
Yep. Cause you have to be.
Oh, it was a dagger in the heart, my friend.
Yeah. It sucks.
Oh,
yep.
Dude, of course I was defensive in the moment, but
yeah, I get that all the time.
I took a work call in the delivery room. It's one of the biggest regrets that I have in my life. But like, I took a work call
what? In the delivery room?
Yeah, man.
Bro.
Yeah. Man, we get addicted to it, you know, and we feel so obligated to
do. You're important.
Yeah, you feel, and it makes you feel good, right, on some level. But like, oh yeah, I strongly regret that decision today. Wow. If you're listening. But,
yeah.
The family will be forever. The Coast Guard will be temporary.
Yeah, they'll replace you instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
unfortunately.
Yeah. Going back to some of the, like, the institutional support, though, like, talking to flight surgeons, it's tough. I know we had the PA conversation. Like, when you just have PAs and you don't have flight docs, they're awesome. They mean really well. But it's hard to talk to the right person, and there's so much stigma against, like, what happens if, like, if I say I'm not sleeping that great, if I say like some of this stuff has happened, there's a feeling out there, I think, that maybe you could clarify, sir, of it's an all or nothing thing, right? Like, if you say anything, the reaction is going to be you hear a car fire and you're diving under the table. Like, that's not what's happening to me. I'm just trying to address something little. I'm just trying to get this out there in my record, or even just, hey, I got to take a knee for a couple of weeks and just, you know, have a couple of conversations with people. You want it to be a sliding scale, but there's a feeling that it isn't.
Yeah. It feels like it's all or nothing. It's always felt that way.
Yeah.
And we keep saying PTSD, but there's anxiety. There are different levels and there's different treatments. And sometimes it's just, so we wanted to come up with something that was in between. That doesn't, it's not an MH Genesis level on getting treatment, but it's tracking it. So that at some point you're like, oh my God, this guy's had 100 cases with, or you've done the biohazard cleanup in the aircraft how many times? And maybe you're fine, but it's a check-in, it's a checkup. Mm-hmm. There's gotta be something else that can be done to help folks out. And I think that the medical community is gonna start looking at it. They have to. The behavioral health is the biggest thing. Mental health is the biggest thing right now. And there's shortages everywhere for it. Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't know, because I've never done it fully with my medical record where I went to the doc. I'm like, hey, I can't fly this week because of A, B, or C.
You know?
We all do everything we can do to make sure we're on duty and we don't miss our flights.
Yeah.
The DOD has a whole program set up for this. They do checkups before you go into theater and when you come out to make sure you're good. It's all documented.
Huh.
We're in theater every day.
Right.
Like, you know, that's standard ops.
It seems like one of those things that we could kind of piggyback from the DOD.
Those questions that I saw in your draft, at least, I felt like can kind of push people in the right direction to start thinking about things more pointed in that, like, hey, if you've seen this type of thing, hey, and it's not just, hey, I saw, like Ryan's example was, we just didn't find anyone. You didn't see anything disturbing, but that situation in and of itself is tragic, and the human mind can't help but project. You know, Ryan projected his life into that situation of standing on that shore, and you know, his wife and daughter looking for him as he tried to rescue his daughter, or maybe you just almost died. Which happens frequently,
emergency
right?
Emergency procedure, like, pick one. Tail rotor. We had something actually happen, and there's been recent ones.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this? Sometimes not seeing something is worse. So imagine you're a watch standard, in a dark, windowless operation center somewhere, and you're dealing with the full case, they never get closure on the cases that they run. And they read about some of the things, or they hear it over the radios. But
yeah,
it, that to me almost seems worse, because your imagination kind of runs wild with, well, what happened? What was it like? Did I not react well? Or did I get through the radio quick enough? Or was my SAR plan good enough?
Yeah.
Gosh, I remember that. I was in a barbershop of all places, and there was this OS-1 there. And I didn't know him, and he didn't know me, but he was talking to the barber. And this seems random, but it kind of goes along with what you guys are talking about. But there was 260 Army 60s that crashed in the Florida Panhandle, probably around 2016 or something like that. It's real foggy.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they went inadvertent, or maybe one crashed. I forget. Maybe it was one, the other one turned back.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And I remember I was sitting there, and, you know, like I said, he didn't know me and I didn't know him. And he was telling this barber about this case, about him running this big case, about this mishap. And I was like, that's a weird thing to talk about. You know what I mean? As an OS-1. But he was in the command center, just like you're talking about.
That's his case.
And he was dealing with it. Now that I think about it, I didn't think about it till now, but I was like, oh, that's a weird thing to talk about. You know,
he was looking for someone to share.
Yep. And we do it all the time easily in our community. Cause
it's
easier that way.
What we're doing now with deers.
What's that, Ray?
What we're doing right now with deers.
Oh,
why?
Right.
It's why that culture, like, there are kegs on tap in wardrooms. It's why we go have patio beers to have these stories and to share in some of the gallows humor or just anything, you know?
Yeah.
It was just making me think, like, how sad would that be if no one at work, or he didn't feel comfortable to have that conversation at work, so he has to have it at the barbershop.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, they're on shift work, right? They don't even see the same people every time they go back.
Yeah, I think they do 12-hour shifts or something, right?
And then they get, like, 7 days off, I think.
No.
Yeah, they do. I think they work 2 days, have 7 days off. Like,
dude, all the OSs that are listening to this are pissed right now.
Man.
Yeah. No, but I was going to bring up that topic too. Like, what do we do now to cope? Like, how do we do it? What's your preference? What's your personal preference? And I guess I'll start with mine, but I do like the peer to peer thing. You know what I mean? And schism is fine. I like schism when, you know, it's appropriate and it makes sense. And it's a case that, you know, maybe the command goes, hey guys, let's sit you down with the schism peer and let's talk it out, because they realize it's a big case. That's really good. And that's been helpful. And that gives everybody a voice. You know what I mean? Instead of just being like the aircraft commander giving a thumbs up, being like, hey, everybody good?
Yeah. Yep,
cool. Yeah. All right. See you later. It gives everybody a voice to kind of like talk it out. And you're probably going to be sitting down for like, what, 30 minutes to an hour or something like that. But even better than that, sitting down with your peers and sharing a cold beer or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be alcoholic at all. That's been helpful too. You know what I mean? Just talking it out, or with your crew. Sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Just chit chat.
I'm with you. Sitting down and talking about difficult stuff with someone I don't know does not bring me closure. It does not bring me peace. It does not bring me the sense that I'm being heard. But man, if I can tell someone I know that I'm struggling, you're like, oh yeah, that. Even like, I don't even have to communicate it. You know, you just like, you get that look in your eye. You're like, your lip starts to quiver a little bit with emotion as you start to say something. And like, oh yeah, that friend picks up on that and is like, yeah, man, I'm here, dude. Whatever you need, whether that's, we just sit here in silence, like, yep, I acknowledge what you were trying to say to me. Got it. Or if you need to unload, and I'm here, man. That's it for me, but like you're saying, that's not everyone, right? And there can't be a one-size-fits-all to this topic.
No.
And that's, I think, another thing that makes it really difficult is how do we respond to people that may need a bigger setting to feel heard, or someone who is trained in, you know, mental health to be able to provide some tips and tricks to help you you know, go through life. Or sometimes it can be just a buddy who's drinking a beer with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Can be just as, you know.
That's probably why it's, you know, why we're talking about it right now, though, because, you know, when there's a problem that arises, we like to implement some sort of a program, right, that usually benefits all folks.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's not a one size fits all approach. And, you know, what kind of resources do you need to throw at it? That's probably the next question. I certainly don't know. You know, I'm not a mental health professional. Yeah. I just like to drink beer and chat with my buds. And that's probably all I'll ever do. But, you know, maybe, but there should be at least, I guess, awareness for what else is out there. And anyway, I think we do a decent job. You know, we talked about some Coast Guard support options earlier. Of course, you know, you have the chaplain and the flight surgeon who also can probably support certain options as well.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, from the Coast Guard standpoint, we do an okay job of letting folks know what those options are. Maybe we don't get people there 100% all the time.
Yeah. And fear of retribution.
Well, there's that, of course,
the
too.
The fear of retribution of saying, oh, hey, and with mental health and continuing to keep your aviation duties is, that's the struggle. Yeah. And I think that's what, you know, our medical community, but heavily influenced by other, you know, small boat forces and aviation and, you know, anyone that's involved with this needs to be involved in those decisions.
So the FAA is kind of going through some stuff right now for mental health stuff, right?
Time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, unpopular opinion, but maybe they implement something that we follow suit with, right? You know, and that wouldn't be probably too unheard of. I mean, we obviously follow FAA guidelines for other things, but maybe they come up with a good program that makes sense for, you know, all FAA pilots. And I don't know, maybe we jump on board with that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a good conversation with the current AMSO, Dr. Fulkerson in Mobile, and he's a huge mental health proponent and supporter of people kind of finding the solution that fits for them. And he spoke to me a lot about the FAA and what those rules and requirements are, and his philosophy is very much in line with that. So it's a great step in that direction of what you're saying, Nick.
Yeah, man. Ryan, you got any other parting shots here before we see if Captain Dill has any? Yeah, go ahead.
My last parting shot is kind of, Nick, what you were saying of, you know, I'm a huge proponent of, that's why we started this podcast, of these conversations matter. And big Coast Guard, we should work on large-scale changes, absolutely. But the interactions that we have with each other matter the most. And to just acknowledge, like, statistically speaking, close to 30% of first responders can struggle with stress, anxiety, depression, PTSD. Like, it's a sliding scale, and it doesn't have to be crazy. But this stuff does exist. And arguing that it doesn't isn't really an argument that holds water. And just sitting down, looking for that quiver in somebody's lip, having that conversation, or just acknowledging, like, yeah, hey, man, like, this stuff has happened to me too. It doesn't make me not fit to fly, but it definitely is kind of a bummer when it happens in my life, or on the larger scale of, this is something that could actually kill me because of not working for me. Hopefully nobody's really at that level and not talking about it, but it can be on any of those scales. And just having these conversations and developing those relationships with the total air crew and the hangar deck, it matters. I just want to encourage everyone to do that. So thanks, Nick, for bringing that up.
Dude, why is it every time Ryan gets on the podcast, you just shut up and listen?
Yeah, he's so smart.
Gosh, Ryan, you're so well-spoken, dude.
Yeah.
I appreciate you, man. You always have some good words to say. And,
thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
And I think all that stuff makes sense, and it's all good stuff to follow up on, man.
Yeah. Captain Dale, two-part question. One, any last things that you think we need to talk about on this topic? And then while you're answering that, and if you could think about, we always like to end the podcast with some sort of aviation advice or life advice that you wanted to put out on the airways here.
Do my best for what good advice is. So the last thing I'll say on the mental health piece is that everybody I've spoken with, every 06, either in medical outside or even from lieutenants on up. You mentioned this, and they all said the same thing. Why aren't we need to do something? We should do. You're absolutely right. Like, we have to do something. Yeah. So no one's ever said, oh, that's a dumb idea, or now we're good where we are. So I think the more we talk about it, and hopefully as a population, as a Coast Guard, it'll start to work its way up and we can get some kind of change made, positive change. And it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll take some time. It'll take some policy. And you got to throw money and people at it.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah. I hope that, you know, anyone that's listening that is struggling, that is afraid to say something, that's an encouragement, right? Like, there's no one out there that's like, yeah, that's not a thing. Like, suck it up.
Right.
Everyone is going to listen to you, I think.
No one's ever said that. I've had nothing but, why didn't we start this 10 years ago? What a great idea.
Yeah.
Or 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so aviation, good stuff. All right, well, you touched on it earlier. I think Ryan on the phone did. He said, hey, we have beer in the wardroom. I put this on. Beer in the wardroom for a reason, right? We always played foosball and got really good at shit talking. That's the only way you could hold your own if you weren't good at foosball.
Guilty.
And shit talking while you play it with the IPs.
Yeah.
That's how you got sort of the camaraderie and the storytelling, and that's what we do so well, I think, in our wardrooms. That's the part I will miss, truly miss, when I retire at some point. But grab a beer or a Zima, whatever it is you drink. I can't say Zima anymore. Nobody knows what that is.
I know what a Zima is.
White Claw probably today's Claw, Zima.
Bartles and James, I don't know, whatever your wine cooler malted beverage is.
Every time I hear like White Claw, there's like a good meme out there. It's like the Beastie Boys didn't fight for your right for y'all to be drinking White Claws.
That's fantastic.
That's true too.
Yes, yeah. That's why I don't drink them.
Definitely not Kenny
approved. Disrespectful to be, you know, to the Beastie Boys,
dude. How dare you?
Yeah, everybody's in a rush to get out of the wardroom at the end of the day. Bell rings, they want to go home, and I get it.
But yeah,
every now and then, stick around.
Yeah,
I don't know. Ring the bell and have a beer and talk to people or whatever your beverage is, and Diet Coke, whatever.
Yeah,
yep. I love that.
Yeah, thank you again for making us have this discussion. It's not always easy. It's not always fun to have, but I can tell you that it matters. It's relevant, and we need to do something now about it. So hopefully this will spark some conversations with a frosty amber-colored liquid beverage somewhere in a wardroom or I don't know, what do boat stations? Do they have – not a wardroom. What do they have? Probably some dive bar. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Sorry, boaties.
Yeah.
We love you.
Oh, yeah.
Do love them.
That's been a good conversation, though. I've enjoyed it. And from my perspective, hopefully it's just awareness. Like, hey, dudes, talk about things.
Yeah.
Cool.
And if we don't talk about them, like, you don't get a say in how it's treated also. So, like, we're developing solutions and mitigation strategies, man, if you don't speak up, no one knows what you want or what you think it ought to be.
Hey, can I do a shout out? One last thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can do a shout out.
Oh. All right. We talked about this earlier, but it's been 25 years since we had a new air station open up, and we've got one happening this summer. June 18th will be the commissioning of Ventura, which I wish I could start over as a JG in aviation, because that would be my number one pick.
Gosh, that would be my number one pick, too.
Well, OPM's listening, so maybe...
That's everyone.
Yeah, I'm, yeah. Right? 60s, brand new facilities. I toured them a couple weeks ago. I mean, I'm sorry, our facilities are not that great. I mean, how many times you can put up new bathroom stall in the walls and it's good. We're good.
Well, when you paint over tiled showers, it's just self-cleaning showers at that point when it starts to peel off.
But it's new and it's ours and it's going to be beautiful. And they got painted lines on everywhere. It's great, you know, and we'll get great helicopters, new crew. I think it's going to be fantastic.
So June 18th and Flight Suit Friday will be there, right, guys?
Oh, let's make it nice.
That's a great idea.
Love that projection.
You're first.
Yeah,
if you say it on the podcast, it
D11 is going to pay for it too.
Yeah, Pac Air is going to pay D11.
Yes, there it is. It's official.
7-Eleven staff jokes.
Heck yes, jokes. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap, boys.
Really enjoyed it, guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, sir.
Thank you. We say goodbye.